And we are joined now by Wilfred from Traitors Season 1 UK. Wilf, how are you this morning, sir? Well, this morning for me, this afternoon for you.
I'm all right. I'm good. I've had a bit of a crazy, like, 7 days of my life, but everything is good.
Good to hear. Good to hear. Let's jump right into it. Kind of take us back. What was the application process like for you for Traitors? Was it a quick turnaround? Did it take a while?
So it was weird because I initially applied. You must have seen the circle, right? You've the circle. So I initially was actually approached for the circle through social media and did the application process for that, which was horrific. Like, when I say horrific, I mean like about 10 to 15 stages of going through your game plan and pitching your game plan. And then they had me live in Manchester because that's where it used to be filmed. It was in Manchester. So I went there, lived in an apartment for about a month. And then they told me they weren't going to use me, right? So I was like, what is this? They did pay me for my time and stuff. But even so, I was like, forget reality TV. I'm never doing anything again. And then I actually stopped doing social media. I was like, that's how hurt I was. I was like, I'm not even doing social media anymore. I'm done with the whole lot. And then I was following Studio Lambert, who make the circle. They're the ones who make the Traitors as well. And I got back into social media after probably about 2-3 months. I was like, actually, I enjoy making videos. Why am I letting it affect my mental health so much? So I was scrolling on Instagram and I followed them from that whole process. And then I seen something advertised as, what was it advertised as? This is brilliant. A psychological adventure game show. I was like, that looks cool, right? Then I basically applied, got a phone call. They were like, oh, we recognize your application from the circle and stuff. And then had multiple various chats where I'd had to like play two truths and a lie, give them my game plan. And yeah, and then all of a sudden you have your psych chats with the psychiatrist. Then you have to go to the doctors and get a full body scan and check to make sure that you're fit and healthy, which was interesting. And then all of a sudden I'm on the plane to Inverness to film a show. It happened pretty quickly, all within like 2 months of like the application, 3 months. I was like, all of a sudden on this show, it was mad.
So there's a lot of similarities between the UK seasons and the US seasons, but one of the biggest differences is you guys didn't sleep there. Where did you sleep?
So we all had different places. So we'd all get taken back to our individual places where we were staying. So like, yeah, just random places. So I stayed in a nice place. It was all right. But we had in the room, I had a TV with no remote. Because we weren't allowed to get onto the internet. So I had no remote on the TV. We weren't allowed any devices that connect to the internet. So I had no phone to contact my missus or my kids or anything. So they take everything away from you. All you have in your room is this TV and you have to use the little fiddler thing to actually turn over. But then I did take an old Game Boy Color because you can't connect to the internet. So they couldn't take it off me. So I played Pokemon Red, like, quite a lot. So in the nighttime, I got back at like 2-3 o'clock in the morning sometimes, and I just have a little half an hour playing Pokemon just to sort of de-stress to be able to actually get back to sleep.
What were you thinking? The show starts, it's day one, and Amos and Kieran are kicked out of the game.
Oh my God. And do you know what? I spent like, so you'll notice if you rewatch it, you'll see there's me, Andrea, John and Amos in a car, and we spent a lot of time together on the train, in the car. So my whole thing was befriend and betray, right? So my whole thing was befriend people, then murder the ones, if I was a traitor, then murder the ones who were really close to me. So I'd get upset and I wouldn't have to fake emotions. I'd feel guilty, so I'd be upset, but people would think it was because they were my friend. So that was the whole strategy. So I don't know if you've heard of something called the halo effect, where mm-hmm. you become friends with someone so much, they just wouldn't be able to think it was you. So that was part of my strategy as well. So I've gotten in this car, made relationships with, like, Amos was in there, and we got on really well. I was like, yes, like, this is part of one of my little strategic plans if I'm a traitor. And if I'm not a traitor, at least I've got people that will back me and we've become friends. And then all of a sudden he's gone, and I was like, that's a waste of my day. I was like, I've wasted like 7 hours chatting to this guy to make him like me. Like, it was so funny.
Is it complete shock amongst all of you when they come back?
100%. I did not expect it. I think, we didn't know what to expect in the show because obviously it was the first time. We've never actually seen it or anything. So we had no idea what could happen. So I remember just being on my toes all the time and thinking, this could be it for me. I remember having this anxiety where we was doing, you'll see, you know, when we go on the wheel and it turns us upside down and stuff. I remember thinking, for some reason, that Claudia's just going to say one person on this wheel is a traitor or something. Because we didn't know how fair it's going to be or anything, which it ended up really fair. Nothing got sort of, there was no hints or anything. But I just remember, because of that issue, what happened to Kieran and Amos, all I kept thinking was, it could happen to us. They could do anything in this game. And it put this massive sense of uneasement. And then when they came back, I was like, actually, I feel really good about this because I think it's going to be fair now because they brought them back and they didn't want them to be out forever. Do you know what I mean? So it was a bit of a strange one when they came back because I was really happy. But then also I was like, oh, I have to try and get rid of another couple of people. Like, it's like more murders and banishments. So, but yeah, it was good. It was fun.
What did a typical day look like? Because obviously, if you're watching the show, you eat breakfast, you do the challenge, you talk for a few minutes in TV time, and then you go to a round table. But there's so many hours in a day. Was there a lot of downtime where you're just chilling?
Not really. So, yes and no. So, like, the day you'd wake up, you'd come to the castle, you would go to breakfast. Like, but it was always stagnant. So don't forget, you'll be like in a green room waiting to go to breakfast or whatever, because they want people to go in. They'll bring the people in and they'll want to get people chatting and stuff. So you could be waiting there for ages and then you come in, you have breakfast. And then it's so weird because breakfast sometimes could last really long because there might be. So imagine when there's 20 people having breakfast, there's so many conversations going on. So breakfast is a bit longer at the beginning and gets shorter, the more people that go out. So I remember it lasts that long. Then after breakfast, sometimes we had half an hour to just chat and do what we wanted. Then all of a sudden it was like, oh, it's lunchtime before mission. I was like, we just had fucking breakfast. So yeah, we'd end up having breakfast and then end up having lunch. And sometimes they'd give us like downtime on lunch. So you just make your food and sit down, but you're not actually allowed to talk about the game or anything. So you're mic'd up 24/7 and there's people listening constantly. So you will sit there and just eat. You could talk about life. You could just talk about like outside and stuff or what you do as a job and stuff like that. So that was really good because it made us closer, being able to have them conversations. But that was it really. And then after that, You get ready for the mission. That doesn't take too long. It's like 10, 20 minutes, like if you're getting changed into different clothes. And then you're heading to the mission. That can sometimes take 20 minutes, half an hour. And you're talking, you're filmed the whole time. So there weren't really that much downtime as a whole. And then sometimes you get to a mission and they'll be finished setting it up. So you have to sit quietly for like 20 minutes or something. And then, then you'll do the mission and come home. And then it was really horrible. I didn't enjoy it actually, because on the way back from missions, you'd have your chats in the car. So you're already in a car. I don't remember being told what car. You just got into any car you wanted. So you just get in a car. There's four people in a car. And then you're like, get back to the castle. And then you have to, so you're in this car and you're like, oh my God, I need to have conversations with loads of other people to see what they're going to do. Or what they're thinking. Then you get to the castle and you probably have half an hour before the round table. So you sometimes end up scrambling or just seeing people scramble about what you're going to do. And obviously at the beginning, a lot of it's just herd mentality. So everyone's like, yeah, we're just going to go for this person because like we haven't got any time. Let's just do it. And then when you get to the round table, it changes everything. Like everything can change like in a heartbeat. Like you can all think, okay, like I used to count votes in my head of who I think was going for who. And that's why I backstabbed Alyssa, because I counted like 6 votes for me. I was counting who I think know out of that little group that are going to vote for me. And then I looked at Alyssa and I knew like 3 or 4 people already going to vote for her. and nobody else could come close to getting over six votes. So she was the only person that I was like, okay, I have to go hard and convince people. But yeah, so after the round tables, you obviously go to the bar, you can have a drink. We're only allowed like one. They said two, right? They were like, yeah, you're allowed a two drinks limit. But after one, so you know, you have like cameramen that will be in the room. Everyone would disappear, bro, after one drink. So you're like, can I have a drink? Who do I ask for a drink now? Like, where's it like? And everyone just ignores you. So you end up like looking around for a drink and no one, you can't get one. It's so funny. But yeah, that's the day. So the day has little bits of downtime, but a lot of just, you're really busy because you're busy, you're talking, you're trying to figure out, you're trying to get around enough people to figure out what's going on, what's the narrative of the day, and yeah, it's weird.
Take us through the Alex and Tom twist. It was the most awkward thing when he made the reveal, and you're just like, why? Why would you blow up your game for no reason?
So with Alex and Tom, and people don't see this, me and Tom, it weren't shown. We were so close.
Oh, that was not shown at all.
Yeah, it weren't shown. Me and Tom are like best mates now. Like, we get on so well, right? And he's a magician, and I used to do magic when I was in secondary school. Like, you'd call it high school, right? So I was like, I got really good at it. And he works for a company that I used to buy decks of cards from called Illusionist, right? And he was doing stuff for them. But luckily, the time I stopped doing magics when he started getting onto it, or because he was scared that I might have recognized him, because in the magic world, he is actually very, very well known. So, But he got well known as I sort of filtered out of doing it. So we were like bros, like chatting about that. I had no clue at all. I had no clue. And the thing is, when it happened, like if you look at the episode back, we call it the Red Breakfast, right? Because it was just nuts. It was like watching Game of Thrones. Basically, John and Maddie are going at me. So everyone's like, they're starting to turn their eyes at me. And I'm like, oh my God, no. And then all of a sudden, when they announce who's on trial, then Tom jumps up and takes away all suspicions from me. Like, basically puts himself in the limelight, then blames Hannah. And then blames Ivan. And it's just like, this is absolutely brilliant because like all of it's gone from me. But I was so shocked. And then, yeah, just watch it. And the thing is, everyone keeps saying, oh, he's not that much of a good magician because he couldn't guess. Listen, I would not have been able to play that game to the level I did if somebody was in there flirting with my wife. I just wouldn't have been able to do it. So you got to think, he's there. And his girlfriend's getting hit on by some other guy, a really handsome guy. Yep. And he's trying to focus and do this. I wouldn't be able to do it. Like, he's obviously, it's not as easy as what it would have been if she wasn't there. Does that make sense? So
no, that makes total sense.
It was a bit strange, man. But then afterwards, like, I tried to recruit Alex just for her brain, for living with Tom for so long and understanding how his brain works. So I was like, I want to recruit her because she's really intelligent, but also she knows parts of Tom and how Tom thinks. So she'd be great. And obviously she turned it down, so murdered her.
Maddie was relentless with you and Aaron. What is it awkward, like at round table every night she's coming after you? Does she talk to you during the day? Are you friends during the day? And then she just turns on you at night. Like, what does that situation look like?
It was weird, man. She was on me constantly to the point where it started to really stress me out. Like, just leave me alone. I know it sounds really bad. I love Maddie, by the way. Like, me and Maddie get on really well. But at the time, I sort of felt bullied. You know, I was like, I know I was the person doing it, but it was so much. It was like, I feel like I'm being targeted and bullied at the moment. Like, I remember I'd like put my head on Hannah and she'd be like, look, he's going to sleep. He's been up all night murdering. And it just didn't stop. Like, there was one time, but we were getting on, but she would always just go, yeah, traitor, traitor, like all the time. It was like, I can't even have a conversation with you, Maddie. Like, and then that's what Aaron was trying to say. If you watch it, Aaron's trying to say, it's getting ridiculous now. Just leave me alone. It was getting really stressful for both of us. And then after episode six, I was really lucky because obviously, like, it was me and Alyssa. And then when I got rid of Alyssa, you'll notice I didn't get one vote up until Kieran's vote in the final. So I went six episodes with no vote. Maddie wouldn't even vote for me because I had that much. People were so confident it wasn't me. And then she was like, I don't want to waste my vote. So she was going for Hannah, for Aaron and Meryl. But even, it was just from her, it was too much. But there was one day, it was really nice, actually. So I told you earlier about sometimes we turn up to a mission and it was really sunny and we was like, had to wait for like 20 minutes. So we all laid on the grass, right? And she laid on my legs and I was laying on Andrea's legs and we was all just laying on each other. It was so chilled and really nice. And then within like an hour, she's going at me again. I'm like, come on, man. Like, we just had a really nice moment. Like, just leave me alone.
It's interesting watching the UK version because the American version, it's not nearly as emotional. Every round table with the UK seasons, it was super emotional. Kind of take us back to what it was like at round table. I mean, there's no way it was fake. I mean, the amount of emotion that was coming out of that room from everybody at different times, it was so palpable. Is it just being in the moment of the pressure and how tense it is? Like, what is going on with all the emotion in the room?
One of the main things is that we are, so we were just normal members of the public, right? So imagine going through all it. So this was what I found really hard. Was you've gone through this whole application process and it's really hard. And then you get chosen and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then you just end it for someone and it's not a nice feeling. And then the thing is we all were so close. There was only one person that I really liked at the beginning, but towards before he got murdered, I just didn't like him. He just wasn't a nice person. But everybody else were like, we was all so close. And the thing is, I was brought up where I moved around quite a lot. So I ended up becoming friends with quite a lot of people. So in my life, I'm quite good at building relationships and finding common ground. So I had loads of these common themes with everyone. So like Faye's a Liverpool fan and I grew up in Liverpool. My mum's from Liverpool. And there was, and then Claire, she had a really, a death in her family. I don't want to go into it because it's not fair. But then I lost my brother and we had all of these different bonds that we had. And then at the round table, they do everything they can to make it as uncomfortable as possible. So when you go there, you sit down. And I don't know if I'm making it up, but I remember it being the coldest room in the whole castle. I remember it just being cold in there and really uncomfortable. And they play this song. It's called The Hanging Tree from Hunger Games. They play that for like 5 minutes before. And then Claudia comes in and says, right, go, basically. And yeah, it was just strange. I think it's mainly our relationships with each other were really strong. And I think with the American one, you have a look at some of the stars that are there, people that understand TV and been on TV and understand that it is just a game. Like, obviously we know it's just a game, but you're so invested into it. You're inside a board game. That's how it feels. You're in Jumanji. Like, this is real life now. And you know, you have to use the word. So you have to use the word murdered and banished. You can't say killed or anything like that. It has to say murdered. So like, if you say something, so if I'm in a MIV room, like the master interview, and I'm like, oh, I just really want to kill her now. They're like, no, you say murder. Like, you remember, you have to, like, that's the only thing that ever, they never stepped in with us ever, only on terminology. So like, you have to use the right terminology. So it becomes like people understand it as a viewer. So, but then it also psychologically gets into your brain. So yeah, it was weird. The round tables were by far the most uncomfortable thing of the whole part of the show. That and breakfast, pretending that you don't know who's coming down, was really, really hard. Like, acting all the time. It was quite entertaining, though.
Do you see Claudia anytime that she's not actively talking to you for the show?
Yeah, man. So during missions and that, she's just chilling. Like, just she'll chilling. Watch us. Yeah, and then, like, before missions, she'll just be walking around and chatting and just, like, you build and with us, if you're a traitor, you spend that little bit more time with her because you'll do the traitor scene. And there was one time where I backstabbed Amanda. I was really upset about it. Like, I felt really guilty. And she came into the room and was like, why did you do that? And I just burst out crying, man. And then we ended up like just chatting for quite a bit. And yeah, she's super cool, man. She's really nice person, really down to earth as well. She helped me get through that, though. She was like, remember, we're making good TV. I'm like, yes.
Take us back to the Amanda decision. Obviously, that had to be challenging. You guys got so far together. What kind of went into your thought process there?
So what happened is, I remember, and I'm such a hypocrite saying this, but I just didn't trust her towards the end because she was so good at being like, she weren't emotionally invested as much. And I'm not saying she wasn't emotionally invested. She was just stronger at playing the game, mm-hmm. like in terms of not letting it affect her day to day. Where me, sometimes I'd ask for like a diary room, and I'd be like, yeah, call me for a diary room. And then I'd go there and just sit there for 5 minutes because I needed a break. But Amanda was just so good at it. And then all of a sudden, I remember thinking to myself, what happens if there's some kind of split or steal at the end? I remember thinking that if there's two traitors at the end, what happens if one of us takes it and one of us don't? And I could just, and remember, we've never seen it and we don't know how the game ends. So we were never told how the game ends until like the end of episode 11. So if you watch it, then Claudia says, by the way, you decide when you want to end the game. Like before that, we had no clue. So I was like, I have no idea how this game's going to end. I've just got a feeling there's going to be some kind of twist right at the end. There has to be. Like it's this twisty game. There's been twists all the way through it. And then I remember that seed playing in my mind. And then I came out and Kieran was like, I remember him saying it needs to be like a hierarchy, like Andrea or Amanda. And I was like, oh, Amanda. Yeah, Amanda. Yeah. And then you just sort of roll with it. And then you just got to do what you've got to do at the time, I think. And the more I look back at it, like season two, they went in there and they were so ruthless. And I think they realized, like when you're there, I think you realize that it's an impossible game for multiple traitors to win. You have to give them traitors. You have to backstab the traitors for people to leave you alone and stop coming out. Like, do you know what I mean? It makes it easier if there's less traitors because you're just sort of walking amongst them. So I think in season two, they understood that a bit more. I would have liked to be able to watch a series before doing it, but then I can't say that because I liked being the original series. It's cool.
If you had seen a season previous, do you think you would have tried to take her to the end and try to make a move at the end? Or do you still would have tried to get her out early?
Nah, I would have taken it. I would have. Do you know what? To be completely honest, I would have kept every single traitor on until the end, like and try to win with them. It's really weird because my game plan wasn't to backstab traitors. It wasn't at all. Like that wasn't the game plan. It just happened to. It just unfolded like that. So Alyssa was weak, and people were looking at her as well. So it's like, okay, it's me or her. I have to fight for myself. Right. Then Amanda, it was a backstab, but pure out of just paranoia and not knowing how the game ended. And then Kieran's backstab was mainly because there's two reasons. I had two plans. So plan A was bringing Kieran, because he was such a strong player, bringing Kieran and we just run and dominate the game, like, and just get, because we had the majority between us. So do that and then get to the end. But when he came in, or the other thing is they're looking for a man. If I need to throw him under the bus, I'll do it. So there was these two options depending on how he was, how he played the game. And he came in and he was such a bad traitor. There was no way that I could convince Hannah that he wasn't a traitor without looking like one. So I was like, when he came in and he was all weird, I was like, oh my God, I've made a shit decision here. And then...
was there ever a thought to take Hannah or to offer it to Hannah?
Yeah, but there's a thing is with Hannah, I loved her so much, right? It was like, she was so close to me. I felt like I couldn't burden her with it. I was like, it's such a hard, I've really struggled with it. And I was like, if I recruit her, I'm giving her this burden. I enjoyed it, mate. But at the same time, I really struggled. Like, I didn't expect it to be hard as what it was. And I think if I watched a season one before, I could mentally prepare myself thinking this is going to be hard. And I'd be a lot stronger in playing the game. But because we had didn't know what was happening. We were all just on edge all the time. It was like a social experiment with us. It was weird. So I think I would have taken all the traitors to the end. But if there was people that were weak, so you have this natural thing as a traitor, right? I think we even spoke about it. We was like, look, if we have to turn on each other on the round table because everyone's going against you, you have this unconscious thing where you have to just do it because your vote's not going to save them anyway. So just go with everyone if they're going for them. So you have this. So I'd keep it like that. If somebody's like going, if people are going for you, then do it. That's fine. But if we can keep the heat off each other, all of us just get to the end. Like, because if you, the longer you take people on, mate, the more friendship groups that you've got, and the more power you have around the round table. So you've got me and you've got my little group that I hang around with, Amanda, then she's got Aaron and Maddie and all that. Then Alyssa had all the youngers, all the young people. And then you just sort of, you have a really strong majority around the table. So that's how to play it. And then just play the table. So we get a murder and a banishment every single day. So that's how I'd play it if I was to replay it as somebody who watched the game before.
I'm not going to say Kieran blew your game up, but he definitely didn't do any favors at the end with his parting gift comment. What is the line? Because he technically didn't say you were a traitor, but he clearly said you, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm watching that and I'm like, well, that's kind of BS. Like, clearly he's saying something there. Like, so
you'll notice now that no other traitor will ever say anything like that ever again. You'll notice now it'll never happen again because
of that.
It wasn't supposed to happen, but I can't really talk about it too much, but
fair enough.
But yeah, for me, do you know what? For me, I think if I took the 100 grand, I think because it's really sad actually. If a traitor from season one won, like me, a male traitor, the country would have hated me. Would have been like, this, because they didn't understand it was a game as much as what they do now. So when Harry won, it was all like, yes, Harry's won, he's won, because people understood it was a game more in season two. But season one, and the thing is, it was hard for us. It was really weird. I don't know how it's viewed in terms of gender and stuff, but because I was backstabbing the women, every time Amanda would make a harsh move, everyone would be like, yeah, slay, slay. But if I did it, they're like, oh, he's not a nice person. It was weird. I was like, but I'm just playing the game too. But with Harry, it was all men, wasn't it? Apart from Ash at the beginning, who Ash admitted that she wasn't actually that great of a traitor. So, but then it was all men. So it's not as, I don't know how it worked in terms of, I don't know. It was just like, yeah, and I thought I was quite empathetic, man. I felt really guilty most of the time, so I don't know, man. It was weird, but I feel like if I won, it would have been hated. It would have been harder for me to have a career afterwards, and then so now it's been better for me not winning because, you got a better public perception, and because I lost with Grace, I wasn't really that bothered. I was just like, yeah, cool.
It looked like a weight was immediately lifted off your shoulder. Like you went from game mode right before to what happened, and you were just like, "I'm so happy for all of you." Like it was instantaneous, the switch for you.
Well, what you got to think about, I really believe in towards the end, Hannah especially. I kept Hannah in for two reasons. One of them is because Maddie was so onto me so much and other people were. She was the only person that kept me fully sane and enjoyed the game. So me and her would just have a laugh all day. So it really helped my mental health being in there with her. So I couldn't get rid of her. And the second one is you think to yourself, okay, if I lose, who would I want to win if it wasn't me? So you start thinking about the other people that you've been spending the time with. So it was like, I don't really want to get rid of Hannah just for that reason. And Meryl was just like a little sister as well. So it's like, do you know what? They're backing me at the round table as well. They're nice people. What's the point? Because my whole strategy was murder the people closest to me. But I was like, I can't do that with them just because I need them with me for multiple different reasons. So yeah, we didn't get rid of them. I didn't get rid of them. And then, they won. And for me, it's just, it was a relief, man. Lying to these people that you get genuine bonds with constantly. And it was, like I said, towards the end, it was really, really hard, mentally really difficult. We've been there for so long. It felt like forever. And you can't talk to your wife, your kids or anything like that. And to be honest, I was like, I didn't believe I'd get that far. And the money didn't even come into my mind. So when you first start the game, all you want to do is survive. It's not about the money. It's not. It was only till episode 12, right? The last day when I was like, oh my God, I can actually win this money. It doesn't come in your brain before that, really. You're just like, this is mad. I can actually win this money. Oh my God, it can change my life. And then when you don't get it, you're like, doesn't really matter. Didn't have it in the first place. I've just been on this amazing journey. And I kept thinking to myself, it doesn't as long as I've had the best time, I didn't expect to get myself that far. So I was just happy that I got that far. And I knew that it was going to be successful at that point. And then when I reacted, I remember the producers coming up to me after, like, because I had to go straight away back to where I was staying. The producers came up to me crying, man. So they all live in this little hut where they're watching 24/7. They all ran out and they were crying. They were like, you've just made like a golden moment on TV. Mm-hmm. Like, that was so nice and so wholesome. And the thing is, the reason why they made me a traitor, which I believe is because I worked for charity for like 8 years. So I've clearly got some morals about me. And then, but I'm super competitive. Like, I was an amateur boxing champion. I had a really successful dance company. Like, I want to win all the time. So they know I'm going to have this like moral battle with myself constantly, which will make good TV, but it's also really hard for me.
While tearing you apart on the inside.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a bit strange, man, but you know what? It is what it is. And I really enjoyed it and it changed my life, which is nice.
You still talk to Kieran today?
Yeah, man. Me and Kieran chat quite a bit. We haven't spoken in the last probably a couple of months. He's just opened a bar and all this sort of stuff. So I've been really busy. I just do social media stuff mainly now, working with different brands and stuff. So I've been really busy. He's been really busy. But yeah, we've been loads of places together, man. We've been festivals together. Our wives are friends and stuff. Like, we get on really well.
Last question for you. Watching the show back, what surprised you? What were you like, hey, now, or any moments where you were watching it back on TV and you were surprised something happened or not surprised, or what were those feelings like?
Do you know what? I sort of could see everything with X-ray vision when I was there. That's the only way I can describe it. I knew that Amanda and Alyssa were ruthless traitors at the beginning, right? Amanda was ruthless all the way through, but Alyssa, before she got emotional and stuff, she was like on it. And the thing is, it was so weird. This is what surprised me, actually. When we came out of the show, quite a few people were a bit cold towards me. And they thought I was like this ruthless, ruthless traitor the whole way through. Like, I'm going to murder everyone. I really enjoyed it. They had this different idea of it. And I was like trying to explain. And I don't think anyone believed me. And then Amanda and Alyssa were like, they believed that. They didn't believe that they were ruthless. They were given the poison chalice and made to do this role they didn't want to do. And then when we went to watch the first episode together, like we got to watch the first episode probably 2 or 3 days before it was aired. I think it was probably one day, actually. We watched it in this nice cinema, private cinema place. And when they watched it, everybody else on the show was so surprised. Like, they were like, oh my God, we thought Will was just this ruthless person. Yeah, he might say a few things at the beginning, but like Amanda and Alyssa, like Alyssa saying dog eat dog and I'm starving and all this stuff. Like they didn't expect it from her. And then I think a few people felt quite guilty about how they're cold towards me when I wasn't just the only one who was put in that position that enjoyed, everyone wanted to do it, who was chosen as a traitor. So that surprised me. And I believe that when you're on TV, I believe if you don't act like a knobhead, you're not going to be shown as a knobhead. Like, true. It's true though, isn't it? If you don't say stuff you shouldn't say, you're going to be okay. Like, I wasn't worried about the edit because I was like, I haven't said anything that I wouldn't say in real life. I'm not, like, I don't care. So, like, it's nothing, you just don't say stupid stuff and you're okay. Like, it's not, like, you know when people complain about the edit? I'm like, but you said it. Like,
right.
Yeah. So they didn't, like, edit it and AI it. Like, you said it. Like, yeah. So that was what I was just surprised with people's reactions towards me after. Yeah.
So you leave Traitors. Is it back to just life as usual? What have you been up to since the show?
So when the Traitors finished, it was so weird because I just filmed this, but so it's mad, right? So I just filmed the final and I get on a plane home with Claudia Winkleman the next day. And then we fly in together and then they get me this really expensive posh taxi. I get home, my wife's at work, my kids are at school, and I just sit there in silence like, has that all just happened? That was the weirdest experience. And I can't tell anybody until it comes out. So the only person who knew was my wife and my manager at work. They were the only people that knew what I was doing. And then, yeah, so we kept it quiet. And I remember just thinking, I hope this takes off. I hope it's big. I hope it's good. because I hope I'm just not known for being on this rubbish TV show. But actually, when it came out, it took a bit of time. So it took until, I think at the height of it was probably March. It came out in November. But really, I think in March was where I remember, like, people stop me in the street now, like, all the time. But back, like, it was worse back then, but still quite frequent now, which is mad. But yeah, so I was working for a charity, like one of the biggest charities in the UK, and I was like the face-to-face fundraiser manager. So like, I organised all the face-to-face events, all that sort of stuff. And then I couldn't put 100% into that job because I was doing podcasts here and this everywhere. And then I was like, I feel guilty taking a salary from this charity when I can't put my 100% into it. So I ended up like just leaving and just saying, look, I can't, it's not fair on you guys to give me a salary when I can't do my best job. Mm-hmm. And then took that risk of just not having a job. So like, but luckily it paid off, you know, like, so when I came out, I was doing lots of podcasts, getting paid for a lot of podcasts and doing lots of social media stuff, which I was already doing before the show. So I already had like 200,000 followers on TikTok before I was even on the show. So I knew how to make viral videos. I knew how to play the social game. So I was doing that sort of stuff, getting paid from that. I started a Snapchat show that did really well at the beginning. Me and Tom were doing it, but we've both been so busy, we haven't been able to come together to do it. So I just do that, man. So I've been doing social media for the past year and a half. But I do a lot of consultancy stuff as well. So like a charity or a face-to-face agency will ring me and want me in for like 2 days a week for a month to basically sort out their fundraising, like travel around and train the staff, retrain managers and stuff, and then do that. But I visit schools as well. I talk about my childhood in school. So I talk to kids in high school, as you would say, and then talk to them about my life and how I overcame some of the challenges of my life and motivate them. So I do that as well. So I just do bits of everything, TV stuff. I've done quite a bit of TV stuff since. We're in talks with a couple of TV shows at the moment, which I can't talk about. So fingers crossed that we get one of them over the line. One of them's really interesting. So yeah, it's been good. It's been mad. It's been very up and down and weird, but it's fun.
Well, I appreciate you coming on today, sir. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, man. I really enjoyed it.